From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, November 12th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It's just a simple definition. Clock. A small mechanical device to wake up people who don't have children. Let me tell you something. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Waking up was more fun with a house full of kids.
You're so weird.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happened on this day throughout history.
Yeah, think.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
All righty.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that's going to happen. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1936. The San Francisco-Oakland Bay Bridge opened to traffic. See, in those days, people actually wanted to be able to travel back and forth from San Francisco to Oakland. I know, hard to imagine. That was a different time. And it was on this day in 1970, the Oregon Highway Division attempted to destroy a rotting beached sperm whale, and they tried to do it with explosives, leading to the now infamous exploding whale incident. Hard to believe that someone, anyone, would have thought that that would be a good idea.
That's just stupid!
So here we are, perched on the threshold of World War III, and I'm going to talk about Peanut the Squirrel and Fred the Raccoon. Okay, because now we have a new president. Sure, he hasn't been inaugurated yet, but we have a new president. And all the world's leaders know that the United States of America is under new management because all of the ducks are being put in a row. President-elect Trump is putting together his cabinet. So far, heard some names, all of them good. Not a clinker in the bunch, but then again, what do you think it was that made Donald Trump the man that he is? He knows how to hire people. And he knows how to fire them, too. That was Jimmy Carter's big weakness as a president. He couldn't fire anybody. It's the same thing here with Joe Biden. I mean, pretty much the same playbook. And this election was pretty much the same playbook that put Ronald Reagan into office. So let's relax for a few minutes and talk about something else entirely. And that would be the, so controversial euthanization of Peanut the Squirrel. Now, in most news accounts, they don't mention Fred the Raccoon, but we're going to mention Fred the Raccoon. A fellow by the name of Mark Longo. He's the resident who took care of Peanut the Squirrel since it was a little itty bitty baby. And he was also the guardian for Fred the Raccoon. Now, Mark and his wife have this account at something called OnlyFans. And it has blue material on it. I'm just going to leave it at that. I don't know how graphic he and his wife get. What they do with their OnlyFans account is their business. We have something far more important to talk about, and that is the euthanization of Peanut and Fred. So, Mark Longo says Peanut was seized by New York's Department of Environmental Conservation. Heretofore, we'll just refer to them as the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation. And fans of Peanut didn't take this very well, this raid, this five-hour raid on Mark's house. Because Peanut was a social media sensation, as was Fred. People really enjoyed going to YouTube and seeing Peanut and Fred. Now, the New York State DEC seized Peanut from Mark Longo's home following complaints, supposedly, complaints of unlawful wildlife possession. All right, I'll give them that. Maybe there was a complaint or two. But I find it rather hard to believe that there were wholesale waves of complaint. I just don't see that. Because Peanut and Fred both look like they were living the good life, okay? Now, the action resulted in the euthanization of Peanut and Fred, and purportedly due to rabies risks and illegal pet keeping. All right, I'll give them that too. But many, including social media icons, have vocally criticized the DEC's decision. Now, this is a New York State organization. Again, I just want to remind you, all right, we're not talking feds here. And a Justice for Peanut campaign quickly formed, sparking protests against New York's DEC practices and, of course, highlighting the need for revising related laws. Now, Mark Longo expressed disbelief and outrage at the authorities' actions, as did a hell of a lot of Americans. With Peanut having over 500,000 Instagram followers, I mean, you can see the public sentiment was just in favor of these animals. I'm referring to Peanut and Fred, not Mark Longo and his wife. I don't know, maybe they're animals too, who knows. But the public opinion swayed against the DEC very quickly, of course, and despite efforts to comply with regulations, Longo claims excessive force was used by officials during the seizure. Again, this was a five-hour raid. And Mark likens the treatment to that of a high-stakes criminal operation. This raid, this five-hour raid, further fueled Mark's dismay as both his home and his animals were just swept up in, dire consequences. Yeah. Now, New York law stipulates that, I want to be fair about this, okay? Can I be fair about this? I am biased in favor of Mark and his wife, but I want to be fair about this. New York law stipulates that keeping wildlife as pets is illegal without proper permits. All right, it's a paperwork thing. But Longo was reportedly in the process of trying to get these. We all know how slowly bureaucracy works, right? And the episode has alarmed the wildlife rehabilitation community, already concerned with regulatory challenges deterring potential rehabilitators. Do-gooders, these are people who are in the habit of doing this. Now, here in Texas, I know you have to be licensed. If you're gonna raise squirrels in distress, and there are a lot of distressed squirrels, usually happens in the springtime. You find a little baby squirrel, a newborn, and on your property, especially if you live in rural areas, well, if you want to raise that squirrel, it's okay, but you have to have a permit to do that, which is not that hard to get in the state of Texas. I don't know about other states. I don't know what the deal is in New York. Do we have a backlog of these people and the paperwork is that slow? I don't know. But this episode has certainly alarmed the wildlife rehab community, and they're already concerned with regulatory challenges deterring potential rehabilitators. And apparently there's a need for more. Well, certainly people aren't going to do this if they're subject to a five-hour raid in their home. Now, DEC protocols mandate euthanasia for rabies testing. And this is a stance criticized due to the minimal rabies risk that squirrels pose. Now, critics highlight how these policies conflict with humane treatment goals, and they're calling for transparent, fair reform. Now, the euthanization stirred pretty severe public emotion, and it was reflected in a highly successful fundraiser that raised over $79,000 to champion reform. Authorities are finding themselves under pressure now, too, to be perfectly fair, to reconsider their approach and ensure lawful compliance aligns with humane animal treatment values. How about humane human treatment values? If you're going to descend on a house with a five-hour raid, could we be a little bit more civilized about this? The incident is, of course, indicative of broader tensions between regulatory rigor and compassion. Can't we have a little more compassion? And this, of course, the good thing about this is it's prompting debate about current wildlife control legislation and legislation's adaptability and ethical considerations. So now you have the public that's demanding shifts in wildlife management practices. That's a good thing. Legislative review appears imminent. That's a good thing. Advocates are pretty passionate, as you could expect. Compassionate about ending harsh practices like this, this kind of behavior. And they're seeking congressional collaboration to reform pertinent state protocols. You know, Peanut's case catalyzes widespread conversation on humane wildlife handling, illuminating gaps in communication between wildlife owners and regulatory bodies. I mean, how much communication is going on between these two, Pete? The do-gooders who are taking care of the distressed animals and the wildlife regulation bodies. Are they in communication with each other? I doubt it. And naturally, campaigns advocating systemic revisions are standing by, standing in the wings, pretty much at the forefront of a movement reshaping New York's DEC policies. You know, public sentiment may actually force real change. It usually does, you know, if they're noisy enough. The old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Maybe this is the grease. I feel sorry for the Longos because I know how easily attached people get to certain, particularly wild animals, who have become domesticated. It's kind of hard to resist them, you know? A raccoon here, a squirrel there. I've seen wild fowl. I've seen eagles and hawks be rehabilitated. It's, you know, it's heartwarming. I'm a sucker for animals, you know. I get upset when somebody kills a rat snake, for instance. We get a lot of rat snakes down here where I live, and they're great. They're goofy. They're goofy as all get out. They're lazy. Once they've eaten, your rat snake probably isn't going to move for several days. Maybe might move. And they don't freak out when they see humans. I've walked by, I don't know how many rat snakes in my life, and they just kind of vodiodo, coiled up, laying there waiting for either their next meal or if they've just eaten, they're not going to move. Say hello to your snake, and that's it. Hi there, Mr. Snake. And I really get upset when people freak out and they try to kill a rat snake. They're pretty easily identifiable. You know, they're dark in color. They have little patterns up and down their back. And they just don't do a whole lot, you know. And if you have them in your barn or a stable, man, it's a good thing to have. So, you know, when it comes to the public, I think overall, we Americans are pretty sympathetic toward wild animals. You know, you don't see us out there shooting coyotes, for instance. And coyotes are, they're actually entering urban areas. And, hey, more power to them. If they're not going after my pet dog or my pet cat, I don't have a problem with coyotes. Where I used to live, we had coyotes in Sugar Land, master planned community. I lived near the banks. I was only, my house was 1,000 feet away from the Brazos River. And it wasn't unusual for me to be out on my morning walk and a coyote would run by. Now, they wouldn't come up and, you know, sniff you and try to pet you. They kept their distance because they are wild animals. But it was interesting to see. So public sentiment may be bringing on some real change. Lawmakers now, of course, they're facing increasing calls for transparency and calls for revisions to kind of, you know, chill a little bit. Can we take care of these animals? Can we maybe give our blessing to people who are volunteering to take care of these animals? Because there's a lot of work involved to that. I think most importantly, we need public engagement. And Lord, that's happening. Thank goodness. And a lot of it being catalyzed right now by Peanut's story, highlighting society's collective push toward encouraging ethical treatment, ethical pacing and enforcement actions. No more 5-hour raids. What's wrong with a couple of officials coming by, inspecting the premises, inspecting the animals? You know, just because an animal's wild doesn't mean it has rabies. The incidence of rabies is not all that widespread. Yeah, it's out there. But geez, can we get by with a little less panic? Ever since Donald Trump was re-elected, you hear it a lot about Hollywood luminaries wanting to leave the United States. They want to go to Canada or somewhere else. Some want to go to Europe. And we've been making a lot of jokes about it, but this really isn't a joking matter, because American emigration interest has surged to record levels. And this is according to new surveys, fundamentally challenging long-standing domestic trends. Are you really surprised when I tell you this, though? I mean, look at the way crime has risen in the last 15 years. This really started to become a problem, at least the rate at which we're seeing crime and the way crime is growing in our major urban areas really started to spike once Barack Obama took office.
Yeah, go ahead, blame it on Barack.
Well, I am going to blame it on Barack, because he was the one who embraced all of the far, loony, lefty, liberal radicals, namely George Soros. Soros was always in the wings. He was in the background. He wasn't creating too much havoc until Barack Obama took office, which was in January of, 2009. And ever since then, crime has exploded because George Soros has been free to move about the cabin, creating as much havoc and chaos as he wants, going city by city by city, seeing to it that radical liberal DAs are elected to the offices of district attorney all over the country. And he really did the job, did it very well in San Francisco and Los Angeles, particularly San Francisco, totally uninhabitable now, which breaks my heart because San Francisco was a beautiful city, and it is no longer. Of course, they just lost their mayor. They just got a new mayor elected. So I don't know, maybe there's hope. And places like Portland, Oregon, which is basically owned and operated by Antifa. Washington, D.C., another bad place. So we have polls now showing that Americans wish to leave the country permanently due to a variety of issues. So you got to ask that hypothetical question, is the American dream dead? I don't think it's dead anymore. It's going to be interesting to see what Donald Trump does. But recent Gallup poll findings are exposing I hate to use the word unprecedented, because I think that's overly used, but 18% of Americans are expressing a wish to leave the country permanently. And this represents a huge increase from figures recorded a decade ago. The data suggests that a notable departure from the United States' traditional image as an immigration destination. And clearly, people are clamoring against our southern border trying to get in. But globally, this interest mirrors a consistent 16% of adults with similar aspirations in 2023, according to surveys across 142 countries involving 146,000 respondents. Okay, so this isn't a small sampling survey. This is a survey with some teeth in it. Now, here's a report from Fox News' Alex Hogan in London.
Americans are moving to Europe in growing numbers.
It's the largest group coming that wants to relocate for a better life.
Relocation specialists say Americans right now are pointing to the same two problems.
Safety reasons and for politics reasons.
Our Boston market had a mass shooting. The local pizza place that I went to on a regular basis had a mass shooting.
Brian and Janice say they left their home in Washington, D.C. for a more affordable and safer life in Portugal.
I don't fear for my life here.
Politics back home also came into play.
There's nobody good to vote for. There's nobody who's going to help the country.
According to Eurostat, the number of U.S. citizens moving to the European Union first spiked after the 2016 election. Relocation companies tell Fox that that trend really kicked off in 2020.
We anticipate with this coming elections that it becomes even more, you know, relevant for people to act on it.
People like Wesley Tan, who moved from L.A. to Poland.
Having the flexibility to be able to leave and move to another country if you want is very powerful.
In 2022, the number of U.S. citizens relocating within the European Union climbed by 28%. The majority of Americans are moving to France, then Spain, Germany, the Netherlands, and then Italy. But some smaller countries are making big waves for what they can offer. 79-year-old Linda Corin from Santa Fe, New Mexico, will move to Portugal at the start of April in hope of a California-like retirement without the West Coast price tag.
The climate is marvelous, and the sea is even more marvelous. And so if you add all of that together, it's a great decision as far as I'm concerned.
So is the grass truly greener? All of these Americans say they do not regret leaving the country, but warn to not underestimate the culture shock and the red tape of moving. In London, Alex Hogan, Fox News.
Now, notably, from 2007 to 2009, the United States dominated global destination preferences at 24%. But this desirability plunged to 18% by 2023. Potential motivations may include socio-political climates altering the U.S. appeal to citizens and immigrants alike. Once a dream locale, and we were, our diminishing magnetism kind of calls for a deeper introspection into the root causes behind these changing attitudes. But you don't have to be a social scientist, a political scientist, to understand what's been going on here. When I look around the country and the condition of our major urban centers compared to 20 years ago, I see some huge differences, and they're not good. There's a rise in crime. The overall economy is in far worse shape because we keep prioritizing foreign markets to do our manufacturing. I mean, Donald Trump's heart is in the right place. He wants to return manufacturing to our country. And if we would only do this, if we'd go ahead and open that Keystone XL pipeline and get energy back to where it needs to be here in this country, if we would prioritize America first, which so many among us seem to think that, well, that's not compassionate. What's not compassionate about putting America first? Our people, our taxpayers, the people who work for a living in this country, what is not compassionate about putting them first? Let's put us first. Then we can worry about the rest of the world. You know, you're so busy worrying about your neighbor's business, you don't see your own house crumbling and coming down around your ears. With each day now, we're getting a little more information as to who we can expect to make up the Donald Trump administration. And, department heads, that sort of thing. Two names we heard that will not be a part of the Trump administration, Nikki Haley and Mike Pompeo. And I'm comfortable with that because I think, particularly in the case of Nikki Haley, we've got a rhino there, a latent rhino. Maybe Mike Pompeo, not so much, but you could tell he was never full bull a Trumper. And we need Trumpers in the administration. This is what really got me. And this was what... late Sunday night, I think, was when I first read this, and this was a communique from Donald Trump, and I think it was on his own platform. But let me read this to you. He says, I'm pleased to announce that the former ICE director and stalwart on border control, Tom Holman, will be joining the Trump administration in charge of our nation's borders, the border czar, including but not limited to the southern border, the northern border, all maritime and aviation security. I've known Tom for a long time, and there's nobody better at policing and controlling our borders. Likewise, Tom Homan will be in charge of all deportation of illegal aliens back to their country of origin. Congratulations to Tom. I have no doubt he'll do a fantastic and long-awaited for job. Well, yeah. I mean, during the last 4 years, I've seen an awful lot of footage, video footage, of Tom Homan addressing congressional committees. Oh, man, he dressed down AOC once upon a time and did a beautiful job of it. And, you know, AOC, she has a very inflated opinion of herself, and she has a tendency to sit there in her little chair during these committees and just runs her mouth with nothing really to go on, nothing to back it up. And one day she tangled with Tom Homan and she regretted that, believe you me. Now, another name that came up that I thought was really super, and this is very encouraging because he's a brilliant guy, Vivek Ramaswamy is on the short list for Secretary of State. Think about that. This guy is good. And, I mean, gee whiz, he's made himself a multimillionaire and built his business out of nothing other than just a good education, a terrific intellect. My God, have you ever seen him in an interview situation? Sometimes he comes across as maybe a little too slick, but what the hell, right? Is that a bad thing? So anyhow, it was made official, I guess it was Sunday night. Ramaswamy's on President Trump's final list for potential Secretary of State. And by the way, there are other names, and they include Rick Grenell, who, by the way, is very good. Marco Rubio, who I think would be very good. Bill Hagerty, don't know much about him, and Vivek. So I don't know. Now, that list of names, it was Rick Grenell at the top, then Marco, then Bill Hagerty, and then Vivek. Now, I don't know if there's any meaning to that order in which those names appeared, but whether that's the case or not, I don't know. We'll wait for it to hit the fan. We'll probably get something official any minute now. Who knows? But it's very interesting to watch a guy like President Trump put together his cabinet, because during his first term, that man learned an awful lot. And again, I want to emphasize, he knows how to fire people. And that's important. If you're going to run a good, efficient government, you have to know how to fire people. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner and Sean Reynolds.
I do travel a lot. A lot of crazy things happen on the road. This is the one story I tell everybody because I'm still mad about it. Because I had to apologize for something I didn't do wrong. And I don't know about you all, but that's my least favorite thing to do. I was traveling through Michigan. I had to use the bathroom. So I stopped at a Speedway gas station. And I realized that's my first mistake, and I own that. And it was a one-person bathroom. Don't worry, this isn't gross. It's a one-person bathroom, which, you know, it's just the sink and the toilet and the hand. You've been in the bathroom, you know. And I popped open the door, and boom, there was a man sitting on the pot reading the paper. Not happy to see me, and he yelled at me. He goes, "Someone's in here." I go, "Oh man, I'm so sorry. I felt terrible. Felt awkward." But then the longer I stood there, I'm like, I apologized, and I didn't do anything wrong. This is not okay. So obviously, I had to stick my head back in there and go, "Just say no, sir, this was on you. You did this to me. I didn't ask for any of this. Lock it up." And who reads the paper anymore? Get out your phone and play Candy Crush like an adult. It's interesting what he said to me, though. I realized this later on. Someone's in here. I realized this, the bathroom is the only place and the only room in the house where we do not refer to ourselves in the first person. Have you ever realized that? Any other room. Who's in the basement? I'm in the basement. I'm in the kitchen. I'm in bed reading a book. But if it's the bathroom, someone is in here. I'm not saying it's me. I'm not saying it's not me. I'm saying it's someone. We get in there and we think we are in the witness protection program.
Yeah, I know, right? Make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.